All right. Have you ever had a great thought, but really bad timing? Like a really good thought, you're going to say it, but you just had really bad timing. I remember on our first year anniversary, we'd actually had a really good first year of marriage. But to celebrate our great year of marriage, if it had been a bad year, we wouldn't have done this, but we had a good year. So we decided we're going to celebrate. We're going to go to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, which is about 9 hours south of here. Beautiful part of the world. And it was on that trip that I had a great thought and really bad timing. I decided that on this 9-hour trip in our Pontiac Sunfire, that it would be a great time for us not only to discuss, but also to decide our budget. And, you know, we had heard of budgeting in the past. In fact, in our premarital, we had talked about budgeting. We did our premarital with the legendary Murray and Maureen Horton. And they told us about budgeting. But we'd never sat down and kind of put numbers to our budget. And so I thought, what better time than our first year anniversary when we have 9 hours? You know, we've got nothing else to do. Let's just plan our budget. Well, it turns out there was a host of better times than that time. Given the look and silent treatment that Mandy gave me, I found out, you know, that there was a better time. Given the look she gave me, I thought, you know, it could have looked like, or you could assume that I had just told her that she could never drink Starbucks coffee again. And it might have come up in our budgeting conversation, actually, which is why it felt so restrictive to her. And here's why we had a difficult time going through our budget. Because Mandy and I come to money differently. I am by nature a saver. I view money as security, so the more money we have and the less we spend, the better it is for me. Mandy approaches money more as enjoyment. Money is to be enjoyed and to have fun with. And so when I brought up the idea of a budget, it just seemed so restrictive to her. And it didn't help that we were in a small Pontiac Sunfire for 9 hours. That was also a little bit restrictive. So maybe today, as we talk about budgeting, you feel a little bit like Mandy did 13 years ago, or 12 years ago. And you're thinking, I don't know if I can get through this, but here's what I want to tell you. You can get through this. Mandy and I survived. We're still married. We have a great marriage. We survived that trip. You can survive the next 45 minutes, okay? You can do this, okay? All right. You know, when it comes to money, we just often view money differently. But here's the interesting thing about budgeting. Today, Mandy, who's my little, you know, enjoyment, she loves money for enjoyment, she actually loves our budget. And here's why. Because a budget says this is how much you can spend in this area. Now, it also says you can only spend this much in this area. But what she's found out, it also says you can spend up to this much in this area. And that has been so freeing for her. And here's why. Our first year of marriage, every time she would go out to buy something, she would feel guilty about making any purchase whatsoever. I think it had something to do with the fact she was married to this guy who saw money as security. And I guess every time she made a purchase, didn't matter what it was, there were these vibes that just kind of radiated from me of disappointment and disapproval, right? But now that we have a budget and she gets her area, she has a certain amount that she gets to spend on herself. I get some on myself and so on and so forth. But she can spend her budget on whatever she wants and I get to say nothing about it. And it's true. Sometimes I'll just look at her and I'll just shake my head. And I'll be like, really, you're spending your money on that? And she's like, I can. It's my money. I can do with it what I want. And you know what? She's right. And in that sense, the budget has absolutely freed her. And it's freed us, actually, in our marriage as well. Also, what's interesting, if you view money as enjoyment, what's interesting, Mandy now actually has turned into quite a little saver. She'll save up 3 or 4 months' worth of her budget. I'm like, why don't you spend some of, you got all this money in your budget account, why don't you spend it? She's like, well, I just want to make sure I've got like a good amount. So if ever there's something I want or need, I've got the money there. I can spend it right away. And she just keeps, I'm like, you got so much, like just spend some of it already. And it's quite interesting, but it's freed us both financially, but interestingly, it's also freed us relationally. So today we're going to talk about money, and we're going to talk about money in the area of budgeting, the money that we live on. And I think what you'll find is that if you apply the principles of Scripture and some of the principles we're going to talk about, you'll find that it'll be freeing, not only financially, but it'll be freeing in your marriage if indeed you are married. And if you're not married yet and you put these into practice when you are married, it will free you in your marriage in the future. So the entire message is kind of based on a proverb. And there's not going to be a lot of scripture. It's kind of like last week. There's a lot of wisdom. It's very practical. But this whole message is based on a proverb. It's found in Proverbs 13, verse 16. And Proverbs 13, 16 says this: wise people think before they act. Fools don't. And even brag about their foolishness. So this is a contrast between wise people and foolish people. And wise people, it says, they look ahead and they see the future and they make decisions now that also they know are going to affect the future, and they're wise about it. They make decisions and they think about the decisions as they act. Where fools, on the other hand, they just act and they don't think, how's this going to affect me later? And this is so, 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 so true of us financially and the wisdom that we carry. Wise people think before they act financially. Fools, they just live, they just spend, and they don't think how it's going to impact their future, and they can get into all sorts of financial stress and difficulty living that way. Well, I want to give some encouragement from this proverb, in fact, all proverbs, because the reality is, some of you might be looking at this and saying, wait a second, if we're talking financially, I've experienced some financial pain. I'm currently in some financial stress. So I guess I'm the fool, right? And is that just who I am? And is there no hope for me? And the Proverbs, and Proverbs all about wisdom literature, there's so much space for both wise people and fools. And the Proverbs never categorizes someone as a fool and says, you can never change. And that's why I want to share. If you feel like, man, I'm the fool right now, it doesn't have to stay that way. The Proverbs always leaves room. Once a fool does not mean always a fool. According to Proverbs, there's always room for people to change, and there's room for you and I to change. And maybe you've acted the fool when it comes to finances, but it doesn't have to be your future. And let's be honest, we've all played the fool in our lives, right? Any of us could look at our lives and say, I was the fool. Thank God that once a fool does not mean I'm always going to be a fool, that any of us can learn, any of us can change as we go through life. So today, we're going to look at living. In this series, we looked at three areas where our money goes, right? Hopefully you have these memorized by now. But three areas that our money goes is some of our money, as we make money, goes to giving. Some of it will go to saving. And some of it goes to living. And order matters. In this series, we've talked about that. Order matters. And the Bible orders it exactly this way. That as money comes in, we make a decision as a thankfulness to God, as gratitude to God, but also as an act of faith to say, God, you've given this all to me. I'm going to give some back. We're going to give first as an act of faith, saying, God, you'll take care of the rest. I'm going to give first as an act of gratitude. You gave this to me. And then I'm going to save second. And then I'm going to learn to live on the rest. I give first, I save second, and whatever's left over, I need to figure out how I'm going to live on that. And that's what we're going to talk about today. How do we live on the rest? How do we live wisely? Live wisely on the rest. And here's how it works with money that we live on. We all live on a percentage of our income. Doesn't matter if you have lots of money or you have very little money. Doesn't matter if you have a great paying job or a poor paying job. The reality is we all of us, live on a percentage of our income. So the question is not, will we live on a percentage of our income? The question is this: what percentage of your income will you live on? That's the question. And whether you have lots of money or only a little bit of money, we all make that decision. And whether you make that decision intentionally, like a wise person, we're going to talk about that today, or you just act and it just happens, it's still a decision. Whether it's an intentional decision or an unintentional decision, we all decide what percentage we will live on. So how do we make that decision wisely? Well, today we're going to talk about budgeting. And last week we talked about a three-step plan to saving, this incredible, from Proverbs, three-step plan to saving. Today I want to give you a three-step plan to living, okay? Setting a budget and then living within your means. Here's your three-step plan to living. The very first step, and this is a really important step when setting up your budget. The first step is this. Figure out your financial pie size. That's the very first step to living within your means, is first of all, figure out your financial pie size. And that, all of us, doesn't matter again if you're rich or poor, we all have a financial pie, a financial pie. Now, I was told after first service, I did not plan this, but today is International Pie Day. International Financial Pie Day. So we're going to talk about your financial pie. So the first thing you do when figuring out your budget, you have to figure out how big is my financial pie, okay? And that means you, if you have a, if you're married and you have dual income, or you're single and you have a single income, or you're married and you just have a single income, you look at all the places where money is coming in, and then you figure out the total amount, and that is your financial pie. And some of us have a small financial pie, and some of us have a big financial pie. It doesn't really matter what size your financial pie is, okay? The point is, you need to figure out the size of your financial pie. And then you go to step two, and this is really important. Step two is decide the percentage you're gonna live on, okay? Because we all live on a percentage of our income. Decide the percentage that you live on. And if you're a follower of Jesus, you might consider two things, which is gonna shrink your financial pie size. And the two things, hopefully you know this already, is you're gonna figure out how much you're gonna give first, right? You got your financial pie, this is how much money comes in. Right off the top, you're gonna decide how much you're giving away. And secondly, you're gonna decide how much you're gonna put away to save, right? To be wise, and we talked about that the last 2 weeks. So you got your financial pie just shrunk because of the percentage you decided to live on. You decided to live on. Now, there's a temptation in our culture to live on a greater percentage than what you actually have. It's called debt, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But we all decide the percentage. As a follower of Jesus, hopefully you decide to give and to save, and then the what's left over is what you decide to live on. That's your financial pie. This is how big of a pie. Again, it doesn't matter how rich or poor or how big your pie is or how small it is. You need to decide how much are we shrinking it to give and save, and then how do we live? How do we live on the rest? So once you have figured out your financial pie size and you decided what percentage you're going to live on, the third step, the last step, is so, so important. And this step is where almost all marital conflict comes in when it comes to money. And that's this. Set your values and start cutting up your pie. Set your values and start cutting up your pie. And here's the interesting thing about budgeting, and it's so, so important. When you get to this point, you're no longer deciding. You're no longer deciding how much are we gonna spend. You've already decided it. It's been predetermined by the percentage you've decided. It's been predetermined by how big your pie is, right? It's already been determined. You're not deciding how much do we want to spend. Now your decision is, what do we value? Because we have a limited amount of resources, and it doesn't matter how rich or how poor you are, everyone in the world has a limited amount of resources. Now the question is, how are we going to cut up our pie? And how much is going here, and how much is going here, and where do we spend the money that we have? And this is really a question about values. Budgeting, interestingly, is actually a question about values. What do you value? So I would encourage you, even if you don't need to live on a budget, because you have so much income and you're doing so well financially, I would encourage you, figure out your financial pie. Look at how much percentage you're gonna cut that down to live on, and then start cutting it up, because really it's a question of value. And even if you have lots of money, it will bring up tension in your marriage relationship if you aren't on the same page. In fact, it's this point regarding values that brought tension in me and Mandy's trip 12 years ago on the way to Coeur d'Alene. Because we had our financial pie already made up. We saw how big it was, and we started saying, okay, how much is going here and how much is going there? And I valued this, and Mandy valued this. And we had to make some compromises along the way. And that was challenging. And you know, it's at this step that often couples in marriage, and if you're not married, this is the step that often we as couples neglect, because we start talking about money, we have conflict, and none of us really like conflict, especially if you're a people pleaser, and so you bury it, and you don't talk about it, and what ends up happening is we defer the conflict, and for the next 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, we live in constant hate of one another in financial areas, because we've never resolved, we've never talked about what are our values, our agreed upon values, because you will have different values. We all come to money differently, and you will have different values. Here's the point. The point is this: know what you value, and if you're married, get on the same page, and then start living within your means. Know what you value. And you have to figure that out. Even if you're single, you have to say, what is it that I value? I have a limited amount of resources called money that God has asked me to manage. What is it that I value? How much am I giving? How much am I saving? And what am I going to live on? And then as you begin to slice up your pie, you start to say, okay, in this area, I'm going to do $200. In this area, maybe it's $100. Here's $50 in this area. And talk about every area, from toiletries to haircuts to eating out to dates to gifts, every area where money's going to go out, and decide. And if you're married, get on the same page. Get on the same page. And once you're on the same page, then start living. And there will be some compromises along the way. You know, a bit of a success story from Maddie and I's past. I told you last week that after our first couple of years of marriage, we decided that we were going to live on one income and save the rest. We had two incomes. We're going to live on one and save the other for a down payment for a house one day. So this was something we had set our values, right? We had set our values. We valued living in a house. So we had an income this big. We decided to live on this big, a really small percentage of what our income was, because we valued together, and we got on the same page, and we did it. But here's the thing, it was sacrifice. And one of the sacrifices we made, because we got to our little budget, and we said, you know what, we only have this much pie. At this point, you're cutting up the pie. You can't increase your pie size, right? So if all the things that you put in your expenses outdoes the amount that you have, something's got to get cut. And we had to cut some things that we valued. And one of the things we cut in those first few years of marriage was eating out. We said, you know what, eating out's really expensive, and it's just not something that we value in this season, because we want to one day have a house. And so we cut out eating out. In fact, our food budget, I think for the two of us, was $300 a month, and we had no money set aside for eating out. And you go eat out one meal, and it's like a quarter of your budget. We just weren't willing to do that, so we said no eating out. But here's where the tension came. We wanted to have friends. And at that time, we were one of the first couples to get married in our friend group. And all the single people, our friends, would go out and do social gatherings around meals at restaurants. And so this one time, true story, we decided, you know what, we want to be social. We still want friends, but we got no money to spend on eating out. So this is what we did. We ate before we went to the restaurant at home. And then, to not embarrass ourselves overly much, it was already embarrassing, we decided that we were just going to order a side of fries and waters. The waters were free and the fries were like $3 or $4. And we shared fries and we enjoyed the social gathering. It was a little embarrassing, but here's the deal. We knew what we valued and we got on the same page. And here's the thing, if you don't get on the same page in a marriage relationship, if you do not get on the same page, one person will say, well, I value this and I'm spending money here. And the other person will say, no, we need to spend money here. And two things will happen. Either you'll be in conflict for the rest of your marriage and it will hurt your marriage relationship. Or two, you'll just both spend money on what you value and you will accumulate debt after debt after debt after debt, and it will destroy your marriage later. It is so important. So important. Know what you value and get on the same page. Have the conflict on the front end. And then live in peace and financial freedom on the back end. So here's your three-step plan. Figure out your financial pie size, decide the percentage that you're gonna live on, and then set your values and start cutting up your pie. And you can only cut up what's there, right? You can't add to it. So you just cut up and you say, well, this is bigger than, we gotta cut back and live within your means. But here's the temptation for, I think, everyone in the world, but I think it's a great temptation for those of us who live in North America. The temptation for us, if this is our financial pie size, the temptation is to live beyond our financial means. The temptation is to live beyond our financial means, and that's called debt. That's called debt. It's saying, you know what? I want this now, and I'll pay for it later because I want it now. And here's the temptation of debt that we all face. We all face. And the temptation is this. It's this. We all have dreams. Isn't that true? We all have dreams. I mean, you have dreams. You have dreams for a vehicle. You have dreams for a vacation. You have dreams for a house. You have dreams for your kids, your grandkids. We all have dreams, and those dreams include money. We need money to make some of those dreams happen. And here's the temptation when it comes to debt. The foolish person finishes this phrase one way. The wise person finishes it another way. The reality is we both have dreams, whether you're wise or foolish. We all have dreams. Here's how the foolish person finishes this statement. We all have dreams, and debt is the means. We all have dreams, and debt is the means. I'm going to buy now, and I'm going to pay for it later because I have dreams, and I want to see my dreams fulfilled. See, we live in a Disneyland. We live in a Disney kind of world. And what happens in Disney is dreams come true. Dreams come true. And we live in a culture where I have dreams and I have one life to live, and my dreams, I deserve my dreams to come true. They should come true. This is the world I live in. They should come true. And if that means debt, then debt is the means. You know, I read a study just recently that in 2019, for the very first time in history, that millennials, my generation, had a larger debt load than baby boomers. Millennials, my generation, had a larger debt load than baby boomers. And here's the concerning fact. The debt load of millennials was largely consumer debt, not housing debt, which is a problem. Now, if you're going to carry debt, the one debt that might be acceptable is a mortgage, a housing debt. And the reason it might be acceptable is because houses typically hold their value or gain in value, so it's kind of seen as a bit of an investment. Consumer debt is debt we take on to have fun. It's to go on that vacation. It's to buy that vehicle. It's not things that we necessarily need. It's things that we want. And millennials, my generation, because we grew up with Disney, think that dreams were meant to come true, and I have one life to live, and if that means debt, we just take on more and more debt, and that's scary. That's scary, and here's why it's scary. Proverbs says this about debt, and this is so, so startling. Proverbs says this: the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. The rich rule the poor, and the borrower is actually slave to the lender. I brought with me today a set of chains. Now, if I was to say to you today, who would like to volunteer to have me wrap this chain around your neck, and then I can pull you and yank you around wherever I want, whenever I want. You are now my slave. Who would volunteer for that in the room? Nobody, right? Because I'm a pastor. No one wants to be a slave of a pastor. That would be the worst thing. But here's the deal. Nobody wants to be a slave in general, right? I mean, let's be honest. Slavery was abolished in the Western world hundreds of years ago. Who of us would now choose slavery? Well, here's the reality. Every day, our world, us, choose slavery. We choose it through the financial decisions that we make, by the debt that we take on. And here's the deal. We're not just enslaved financially. I think we've actually become enslaved to our own desires. We can't say no to ourselves. We are slaves to our own insatiable desires. And we all have dreams, right? We all have dreams, and I have a right to have my dreams come true. I'm entitled to it. And we enslave ourselves. We enslave ourselves. Proverbs say that's so, so unwise. That's acting without thinking. So we all have dreams, and debt is the means. That's how the foolish person finishes that statement. Here's how the wise person finishes that statement. We all have dreams, and we must live within our means. We all have dreams, it's true. All of us have dreams, but we have a responsibility to live within our means, which means I have some dreams that I'm gonna have to wait on to accumulate the money to be able to pay for it. And I have some dreams that will never come true. Because dreams, my dreams are not a right to me. They're a privilege if they come true. It's not a right. I'm not entitled to them. And the wise person makes decisions with thought, forethought, looking at how that decision is going to impact them in their future financially. You know, Proverbs 13:16 says, wise people think before they act, fools don't, and even brag about their foolishness. I want to encourage you. I think there's so much hope in Proverbs. You know, I said earlier, once a fool does not mean always a fool. Once a fool does not mean always a fool. We can change. We can live differently. And so for those of you that right now you're feeling so much shame because you're saying, I've been the fool. In fact, I'm currently the fool. I am over my head in debt, and I don't think there's any hope to ever come out of debt. There's so much hope for you. And to share this hope with you, I want to share a story with you. A story of a couple from our church who was so buried under debt, so buried financially, we would all say there's no hope for them. It was hurting them financially. It was hurting them spiritually. It was hurting them in their marriage relationship. But it wasn't the end of the story. Here's the Austin's story.
Hello, Mount Olive, and whoever else might be watching. For those of you who do not know us, we are Darcy and Jeanette Austin. God has and continues to work in many areas of our relationship, and today we will share on how God has worked in the area of our finances. For those of you who do know us, you might be shocked to see that I will be doing the majority of the talking and not my wife. When Jeanette and I got married, I did not want to be bothered with paying the bills, etc., so I handed full control of our finances to her. What we failed to do is to discuss what our financial plan was or how we were going to manage our money going forward. It didn't take long to realize we both viewed money in a very different way. I hated debt. And when I saw our debt load starting to increase, I started to get very critical with Jeanette about how she was handling our finances, and it became the source of the majority of our fights. My two biggest problems were, one, I expected Jeanette to think like me regarding debt, and two, I expected Jeanette to fix the problems without my help. I also had a desire to please my wife, which in of itself, I don't think is bad. However, I would make impulse purchases knowing we couldn't afford them, thinking they would make our relationship better. Unfortunately, I would just end up regretting those decisions and fight with my wife, stealing any joy that the purchases might have brought her.
I'm not sure why, but I saw debt as a way of life. My friends all had debt, and if the bank gave us the credit limit, it must be okay. During this time, Darcy and I were both very busy with work and other commitments, and from my perspective, I was managing things fine, or at least the best I could. But I felt like I was living in a yo-yo. My love language is gifts and surprises. So when he would surprise me, I'd be excited and certainly not think to say, no, we can't because of our budget or the financial situation. And then he would get upset about it, and then I would be hurt. So I actually started to hide how bad things really were from him. And then if he didn't ask, I certainly didn't show him.
For 10 years, we repeated the cycle of fighting over finances. I assumed she was clear about how I felt and was going to fix it. And then I would let it go for a while until the cycle repeated itself. One night, as I was looking at our financial situation and saw that both our credit cards and our credit line were at their limit, I hit my breaking point. I couldn't understand how we were making more money than we had ever made, and yet we were in the most debt we had ever had. My conclusion was that my wife didn't care about the one thing that I wanted, which was being out of debt, and I felt hopeless that all my hard work was for nothing. That night, I told Jeanette that I was done and that I couldn't do this anymore.
I knew the day was coming that Darcy would find out how bad things were and how bad our situation was. And in some ways, I lived in fear every day when that would come. Darcy's words, "I'm done," scared me to my senses. I knew I had to change my view on things and learn to be accountable for all my spending. It has not been easy. There are things that are important to me when it comes to spending that Darcy doesn't see as necessary.
Thankfully, and only by the grace of God, it did not end this way. God has worked in both Jeanette's and my heart. God has made me realize that if I wanted things to change, that I had to step up and play a big role in the process. I went online and searched Christian teachings on getting out of debt, and I ended up on Dave Ramsey's website. I looked briefly at the Financial Peace University course, but I was too cheap at the time to spend the $100 to buy the course, and was determined to figure this out on my own. What I did, though, was downloaded the 7 baby steps to getting out of debt and the free budgeting tools offered on his website. Jeanette and I painfully worked through the budgeting tools and created our own Excel budget spreadsheet that we have faithfully gone over every month for the last 8 years. Change did not come easy. This process has challenged our communication skills and has taught us the need for compromise, as we are both unique individuals. Other key learnings from this process are the following. One, I believe for this to work, both people need to be involved, whether one person is in charge or it is a one-income household. Two, by going through your budget and expenditures monthly, it provides full transparency of your financial situation and provides accountability to each other for decisions made. Three, the budget provides a guide for any financial decisions to be made, especially major ones. Four, you need to be content with what God has provided in each season of life and be flexible to adjust your budget accordingly. God has blessed us beyond what we deserve. Jeanette and I are still together, and He has taken us from close to $100,000 in consumer debt to having no consumer debt, a 3-month emergency fund, and Lord willing, our mortgage will be paid off in less than a year. We have recently even been able to begin retirement planning and have been blessed to help others in financial need, which has also opened up doors to witness. With the COVID-19 news, my boss phoned me recently to tell me that I might be able to work for a minimum 4 to 8 weeks and could be longer. After the initial shock, I took a deep breath, grabbed my wife's hand, and said, "God's got this." I said, "We have a 3-month emergency fund and the ability to cut our budget even further, and God will do the rest." It also gave me the opportunity to contact my boss to tell him not to worry about me and that I was going to be okay financially and that I was trusting that God has a plan in all of this. God has been placing a desire in my heart to use our story to help other couples, individuals, with their finances and to journey with them. Like I shared before, it is only by God's grace that we are here today telling our story. But I'd also like to thank my wife for allowing us to, one, to be vulnerable, to tell this story in front of you, and two, I want to thank her for putting up with me and not giving up on this, on us during this process. I hope that if this story has touched any of you, that you would feel free to contact the staff at Mount Olive or us directly. I don't know how, what that means or how this process will work yet, but we would love and we would be happy to follow and work with anyone through this process. Thank you.
You know, I love that story for a number of reasons, but I think first and foremost, I love it because it's just God, God, God. God pulled them out of this, and it was God's wisdom that they've discovered that helped them to put the hard work, and God helped them persevere. And their marriage was down a track that they didn't want to go, and their finances was down track they didn't want to go, and God pulled them out of it as they were willing to follow him. The other thing that's really cool about this story, we actually shot this video over about a year ago, right before kind of COVID hit, because we had planned to do this money series last March. COVID hit, and we postponed everything. But this past January, Jeanette talked to me after one of our services, and she said, "Elvin, this next Friday, we make our last mortgage payment. We are completely 100% debt-free." And I think that's just unbelievable, completely unbelievable. And I share this, and they shared this with you so that you would have hope. I don't know what financial situation or even marital situation that you're in right now that you think, is there any hope? Is there any hope for us? We're so buried, so buried. Can we find a way out? And their story is encouragement that if you apply God's truth and you walk in his ways and you trust in him and you do the hard work of following him, the hard work, that God will help you through it. God will definitely help you through it. There's so much hope. The other thing I mentioned in this series is that money is often a great source of pride and a great source of shame. And maybe you're feeling shame over your financial situation. In fact, Darcy and Jeanette talked to me many times, like, we don't know if we want to share because people will know. People will know. There's so much shame in people knowing that we were so bad financially in such a difficult place. Now, here's what I want to encourage you. The shame is not in being vulnerable and asking someone to help. The shame is in going the trajectory that you're currently on. Step out. Be vulnerable. And share with someone. Darcy and Jeanette, they said in the story, and they've reiterated this, they are willing to walk with anyone who is saying, I need some help in this area, and to journey with you. And so if that's you, contact the church. You can contact them directly. We actually have on our website, we have the Excel sheet that they put together, that they budget with. There's also a bit of a simpler one. There's both their advanced one and a simpler one. And so it needs some explaining, though, because, you know, Excel sheets sometimes need some explaining because there's formulas and different things. So maybe if you're like, we just want to start budgeting, and you want to get in contact with them to figure out how to work their budget sheet, just contact the church. We won't know if you're contacting them just to know about how to run the Excel program or how to journey through your difficult financial situation. We'll just pass on the information of how you can contact them, and they're willing to journey with you. And you can find that resource at our website at the resources tab or in this message. If you just go to the message, it's all underneath this message. The other thing we have is another resource, which is an app. It's called Good Budget App. If you're into apps, there's hundreds of apps. You can pick a different one. This is the one Maddie and I currently use. We've been doing it for about 2 years, and it's worked well for us. So if you want to do a budget on an app, you can do that as well, and that's on our resource page as well, and the sermon series page. The other thing that's there is a link to Dave Ramsey's website. And you should be proud of me. We just got through an entire five-week series on money, and this is the first time I've mentioned Dave Ramsey, okay? So that's pretty impressive. So you can go to our website, and there's a tab to Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University and also his budget app and all those things. I'm so excited for this series for this reason. Money can be such a bondage for us. It can destroy us in our marriages, in our family relationships, and it can hurt us spiritually, because when we're under so much stress financially, we don't think about how can I grow in my relationship with God? How can I witness to my non-Christian friend or brother or sister? All we're thinking about constantly is, I'm drowning financially, I'm drowning financially. How can I live? And God wants us to be free. So would you grow in freedom? And this would be a fantastic start. So to sum up the series, just so you know, this is our last message in my money series. To sum it up, we started by looking at money from the broad perspective of God's perspective. And we realized that none of our money is really our money. We're not owners of the money. We're simply managers of what God has given us. And as managers, God has given us the privilege to give to eternal things, to invest temporal money to build eternal treasure, which is an unbelievable thought, to be generous. And beyond that, because we're not owners, we're simply managers, one day God's going to say, how did you manage the stuff I gave you? Your breath, your energy, your life, your money. How did you manage? Because you were a manager. And as we've talked about, give, save, live. It's challenged all of us to be better and better managers of that which God gave us. May you continue to grow in that. Let me just pray with you. Father, thank you for your word that challenges us, your word that encourages us, your word that shows us the best way for us to live. Thank you for Darcy and Jeanette and the way that you have worked in their life. It's as Darcy mentioned multiple times in the video, it is the grace of God. They have so much more than they deserve. It's a gift from you. And you gave them the gift of your word and wisdom, and they applied it to their life. And it was hard work, hard work. But they are living in the freedom that your word gives. And God, I pray for each of us that we would not only hear your truth, not only hear your word, but that we would put it into practice. And Jesus, you said when we put these words of yours into practice, it builds a foundation that will not crash. May you be our foundation. We pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at mountoliveefc.com. We'll see you next time.